Let's continue now with our farmland lease edition of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week with Luke Worrell and Gary Schnicke. They made a presentation for the FarmDoc team, and we're going to pick up with Gary Schnicke as he begins to detail the different kinds of farmland leases.
A share rent lease is one where the landowner and tenant share an input cost and revenue. So typically the landowner and tenants share in the seed, fertilizer, herbicide, insecticide, and fungicides. Those costs are shared, and we'll get into the shares, which do vary across Illinois. The landowner typically receives the grain. So the simplest case would be the farmer harvests the grain, takes it to a elevator or delivery point, and the landowner would take title to that grain at that point in time, and they would pay storage and drying on that grain. The landowner would also share in commodity title payments, and these would be ARC County and PLC payments, and those would come in the equal share of the revenue share that the landowner receives. That does mean that the landowner will have to deal with that farm service agency and go in and sign the paperwork, or go in may not occur anymore, but we'll have to deal with the paperwork from farm service agency. Luke, what would you add here?
Yeah, you know, this is, you'll hear this described as your typical, your classical 50-50 arrangement. You know, some other things that come up here. If you are doing this, yourself without a manager, you know, you would need to market your half of the grain. Decide who exactly is going to make the seed, fertilizer, herbicide, insecticide decisions. Is that the tenant? Is that a collaborative effort? And just a few other things that you would need to do on your half or your share of the crop that wasn't on there is, crop insurance. Not only the FSA paperwork would be your responsibility, but are you going to have crop insurance for your half of the grain? You know, of course, we're talking multi-peril and crop hail and things of that nature. So that probably, you know, several generations ago was the most dominant lease, I would guess, but it has slowly been chipped away at by cash rents and variable leases.
Yeah, I think you're right, Luke. This was the basis of the beginning of the rental market. The crop insurance is a good issue that landowners, I would encourage landowners to purchase crop insurance on their share of the acres. Making those arrangements and getting that done. Typically, or in many cases, the landowner will be making payments in spring for the crop cost, and then we'll receive the grain. So there are some cash flow considerations here as well. Mm-hmm. As Luke mentioned,
chime in. I think that's a great point too, is, you know, depending on the situation. I mean, I know we have owners who like to get expenses done by the end of the year. Some get income by the end of the year, and some are the complete opposite. So again, it kind of comes down to staying flexible and kind of tailor making your management approach based on the actual familial situation.
And again, share rent, you as a landowner will have a lot more decisions to make. The other thing, and again, in northern and central Illinois, we typically see a 50-50 landowner sharing percent. The landowner gets 50% of the grain and pays 50% of the crop costs, those seed, chemical, fertilizer costs. And we often see an additional rent of $25 to $35 per acre from the farmer to the landowner. So, and that is the part of the lease that's the modified lease. That has grown up over time, and it's fairly prevalent, but not universal. That is a pretty common split in northern and central Illinois. The splits become much more varied in southern Illinois. We have some two-thirds, one-third relationships where typically in those cases, the farmer pays all the seed costs. You will see some 50-50 and 60-40s in southern Illinois. And that will also, the split of those will depend on tradition and also just the productivity of the farmland. The more productive of the farmland, the more you see 50-50s. The share rent lease, the landowner will pay all property tax and maintain land improvements. And that's, the land is the landowner's, therefore that landowner will pay the property tax and maintain land improvements. Luke, you have some issues to add here?
No, I think this is entirely accurate. You know, if it's your land, you pay the taxes. You know, maintain land improvements. What I will mention is sometimes, you know, as you can see in the picture, that's obviously, you know, some field tile of some sort, some large-scale capital improvements typically fall on the landowner's side of the expenses. But there are situations where there is some collaboration in regards to getting a large-scale tile project done or some of these other larger projects. Also, depending on the relationship and the history between landowner and tenant, you know, a lot of times, what are those land improvements that aren't big but aren't entirely small, like repairing a dry dam or replacing a riser pipe? Those are the kind of things that sometimes, based on the situation, a tenant will take care of. But large-scale land improvements, capital improvements, and property taxes, yeah, they almost always fall to the landowner.
Under a share rent lease, the farmer pays all machinery costs, including the fuel, including pretty much everything. One of the issues that we often see or often hear about is lime. So lime is applied and typically has a life of 4 to 5 years. So if a farmer makes a lime application in this year, that lime will have a life of 4 to 5 years, depending on application timing. We see, and I would suggest that in those cases, if the farmer pays for the lime, that cost is prorated. If the lease is broken, the landowner will make a payment to the farmer for the lime. So that, Luke, what's your thoughts on that as well?
Yeah, that is typical. You know, like anything, there are a few exceptions, but I've seen it done exactly how you mentioned it. We typically prorate it over 4 years. You know, very rarely does it become an issue, but occasionally, yeah, you would need some reimbursement for some lime that you as a grower didn't get the full useful life out of.
And if you want to see, if you go into the management section of FarmDoc, and again, if you're working with a farm manager, they will have their own lease forms and lease agreements. But if you want to see some that were put together by the University of Illinois, go into the management section of the FarmDoc, go into farmland leasing. You will see a cash rent lease there over on the corner, and there are all sorts of leasing arrangements. There's one for fixed cash rents, and if you keep going down there, we have conservation endorsements and some variable cash leases as well. All right, that's a share rent. Here's a cash rent lease. Here, the farmer pays the landowner a cash rent per year. So this is relatively simple, except for determining the cash rent. And that's often often the sticking point, I suppose. And obviously, farmers don't want that to come up, and landowners don't want it to come down. So there's a deal behind that. And payments can, and typically those cash rent payments occur once a year, generally before planting, twice a year, once before planting and once after at harvest, and more times. You could have three payments if you want. I would say over time, I've seen a shift from twice a year to once a year before planting, and that probably has resulted in recent times because interest rates have been so low. Anyway, Luke, cash rent leases.
Yes, yes, very. I like the way you put it, that it's simple except for the rate. But yeah, you know, and I think one of the things we've seen, especially in recent history, and one of the reasons I personally feel we have seen kind of the continued shift towards variable leases that we're yet to address is, you know, so right now we're negotiating 2023 cash rents. And, you know, I'm a professional, obviously, you know, and Gary, and it's our job to try to project and get a feel for what is possible next year. But that's a hard business. And so I think cash rents sometimes can be a little reactive to what just happened in 2022. I think a lot of times cash rents are set based on what just occurred. But we all know that every year is different. And so, you know, it's hard to say, well, what is the right to farm this acreage worth next fall? Because next fall is when the farmer is going to decide if it was a good decision or not. We're kind of projecting retroactively. And so that's tough. That's tough. And Gary, I think you're right too. I think we had seen maybe more, you know, once a year payments, a springtime payment. You know, our book of business personally, we still see a lot of twice a year payments. I think that, you know, is still obviously the same total dollars to an owner, but helps the farmer with, you know, a cash outlay. Typically we see, you know, the first payment due, you know, March or April 1st with the second payment, either sometime in October or November 1st. I don't see them many times where you do more than twice. Certainly you could. I think that's just more chances for somebody to forget or one more thing to keep track of. So I would say majority of it's twice a year. But, you know, again, we could have a whole nother webinar on cash rent leases and the thoughts behind how to try to formalize those.
On the cash rent lease, we have we have two sources of information that I want to point out. One of the things that, again, because of the cash rent, we often get questions about what the cash rent should be. And I always typically point to two pieces of information, imperfect pieces of information, but two pieces of information. One of those are average cash rents, and both of these are on our FarmDoc website. You go to the leasing section and we keep this up to date. We keep this up to date with the latest USDA numbers on average cash rents. I would warn an individual that the average cash rent gets you in the ballpark, but any particular lease in a county can vary from that average considerably. $50 or more. Either up or down, that would depend on productivity, farmland relationships, etc. And actually the desires of the landowner come into that as well.
Correct. Yeah. Can I make a comment right here, Gary? Sorry to jump in here, but yeah, you know, I looked at this slide and so just a little bit to be careful of, you know, one, we're seeing 2021 cash rents, right? Well, we just talked about how it's hard to negotiate cash rents a year in advance. So if these are the 2021 cash rents, they were likely negotiated in the fall of 2020. And then you have to go back and look, what have we seen in 2021 and so far in 2022? And that's huge increase in farmland values and therefore a pretty substantial rise in cash rents. I think if I'm recalling the surveys we've done over the last 2 years, just off cuff, I think cash rents, we probably are up 25% from where we were when that slide was put together. But anyway, go ahead, Gary.
Hey, Gary. Gary, Todd Gleason here too. I have a question about this. I was thinking about yesterday as related to this USDA survey, because it is a current cash rent survey when it is done. How does it account, or does it just simply miss the variable part of the cash rent? And given that 31% of those that are managed by professionals are that way, I would think that would be important.
By the way, we made a mistake. It's 2022 cash rent.
Correct.
So, okay. All right. So forget everything I just said.
No, but
I think the fact remains it probably
yeah.
has it when it comes to those studies, the real time moves a lot faster than the data can come out sometimes in some instances.
And second, I do not know how USDA handles variable cash leases in their survey. So I don't know how they handle that. The grayed out counties are, by the way, counties that are not reported by USDA. So for whatever reason, they didn't get enough responses in those counties.
Yeah, and I think your next slide, Gary, is probably a much closer snippet of what we see right now.
Yeah, and this is from the Illinois Society. You see, and we're giving, this is from professional farm managers. It shows through 2022, their actual farm leases and what they were projecting for 2023. And this was done in August, so the things might have even changed since then. But we're expecting lease terms to go up in 2023, largely because farmland returns have been good. So, Luke,
you know, I think again we could have a whole webinar on this, but yeah, I think this is a much better indication. I think this goes back to what I was saying. I believe, you know, if you look back at 2021, where you were, you know, we're about 25% ahead of where we were just 2 years ago. So it's moved pretty quickly, obviously.
Yep. And again, setting the cash rent is always the hard part. And just the characteristic cash rent is a difficult parameter to determine. Landowners have little management and risk. Once the cash rent is set, landowners still need to inspect property and deal with land improvements. And finally, and I'm going to illustrate this, Luke, comments here before we show the lag nature of cash rents.
No, go ahead.
So this is, what I'm showing here, this is from FBFM records. The blue line is what share rent returns to the landowner have done on average. And the green line is cash rent. And the orange bars are farmland returns through a projection for 2022. You can see that share rents react much faster to economic conditions, as you would expect them to, and cash rents tend to lag. So cash rents tend to go up slower than returns do, and they will likely come down slower when returns come down as well. It's sort of interesting, over this entire time point, and this would be averages, the average cash rent was 230, share rent was 245. And part of the reason that share rent is higher is because of the last couple of years. Just so you know, if we took the last couple of years out, the cash rent and the share rent would have been much closer.
Yeah, no, and I think, again, I think it would be a different viewpoint if you took the last 2 years out. Obviously, cash rents are going to be slow and steady, okay? And share rents is where you're going to see the variability, and you're going to have some good years, you're going to have some bad years. And it kind of goes down to what my grandma always used to say, is she doesn't need to go to Vegas because she farms. So that sums up this slide.
All right. Let's go to the third type, which is variable cash lease. It's a modification of a cash rent lease, and it does a very good job of considering the impacts of return changes over time. That's the design of a variable cash lease. We're going to give you one example, and frankly, there are many examples here. We're going to give you one example that is on FarmDoc. I'm sure that Lutz will vary from this, but we're just giving an example here. And Luke, you do use variable cash leases, correct?
Correct. And they've become more popular, and I think because, you know, they're designed to give a true snapshot of what transpires. You know, we just kind of were lamenting how it's hard to base cash rent on what happens next year. Well, a variable cash lease, if it's constructed well, it bases its rent on what indeed happens, you know, that year. So I know we just have one example, but like Gary said, there are literally tons of modifications you can make. My two things I would strongly suggest to anyone who's thinking about this. One, you want it to be fair and detailed, but there's a fine line between that and overcomplicated. I think you definitely need to try to keep it as simple and straightforward as you can, because there's nothing worse in a variable lease for a landowner and a tenant to be happily going along a year, but unbeknownst to both parties, they have completely different ideas of what is actually structured. So I think it's of utmost importance to make sure everybody is on the very clear same page before a year starts.
Yep, and we're going to go through a simple example here, and you can read more about this in the article that's linked in this slide. But there's several parts of the negotiated parts of a variable lease. Pretty much all of them need, and you actually do need, a minimum cash rent. You need the minimum cash rent to be meaningful so that the landowner isn't going to receive the FSA payments. And that's actually most of these leases, you want the ARC and PLC payments to be going to the farmer so that the landowner does not have to deal with FSA. There is also an additional cash rent. So you have this minimum cash rent, and this additional cash rent will vary based on economic conditions, and that is usually crop revenue. So that additional payment is usually a percent of crop revenue, and when that percent of crop revenue exceeds the minimum cash rent, we will have a payment. A couple other things that you have to agree on is how crop revenue is determined. And in most cases, that's farm yield times the market price. And we would suggest that market price is an average of quote, so an agreed upon delivery point, say Wednesday at some elevator that the grain could be delivered on.
A couple quick comments. One, your previous slide, and I think it's important, is, you know, in the era of volatility we're in, absolutely a minimum cash rent, but I think a maximum payment is also beneficial for the farmer's perspective. I think given the volatility, I think that's fair, especially, like we said, there's 100 different ways to go about these, but that way both owner, farmer know the absolute minimum and the absolute maximum. So I think that's important in the age we live in now, is to have that maximum. When they first came out, a lot of them did not have a ceiling, and that led to some pretty awkward conversations based on some of the factors that vary into it. Secondly, on the next slide that Gary just mentioned is, you know, the market agreeing on, you know, the market price. You know, on ours, we try to use an elevator that typically is where indeed the operator would take the grain. You know, sometimes getting a quote every Wednesday might be cumbersome and hard to keep track of, but I think you do need to actually have enough dates built in to where you get a true representation of that marketing window that the farmer has throughout the growing season.
Suggestion for minimum cash rents. This is actually is our suggestions at University of Illinois for minimum cash rents, just to get you in the ballpark. I believe Luke would have different ones and probably higher ones in this case, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of times what we see in our industry of late is you kind of try to gauge what your market cash rent would be. You know, what would happen if this farm was just out there and open? And then you take that number and you scale it back to about 80-85% of that. So, you know, again, you can go about it a bunch of different ways. I think the real life examples that I'm involved in that I know of, not just within our company, but others, I think you'll probably see a little bit higher of a minimum, but certainly a lot of that too depends on all of the extra parameters you have in place.
Yep. And then the rent factor. So this is the percent of crop revenue that will be used to calculate the additional payment or the total cash rent. These were calculated by us here at the University of Illinois, and they over time from 2000 to 2020 caused the cash rent to equal the variable cash rent. So if you want to have received more over time, you would raise those rent factors. If you want those to be lower, you would be lowering those rent factors. What else do we need to say about variable cash leases?
Yeah, I would just, I would caution. I think they're a great tool. I think conceptually, it can be really fair and can eliminate potentially some of those feelings at the end of a season where, you know, a lot of times with the cash rent at the end of the day, some owners or some farmers might feel they had the short end of the stick. But I think, you know, a flex lease is a good way to try to combat volatility and give a true snapshot. So again, keep it simple and keep the communication clear and go from there.
Gary, yep. And I have one additional comment here, Gary, as you move on into other parts of the leasing. I did check just now with Lance Honig at USDA NAS in Washington, D.C. about my cash rent survey question and what it does and does not include. It by default does excludes both the flex and variable leases. So it is cash rent only.
So that would be that's good. Thanks, Todd. Those are fixed cash rents. They do not include variable cash rents. So that's good to know. And that makes, I think that's a good approach by USDA. The last type of lease, which we're not going to spend much time on, is custom farming. Again, we don't see many individuals do this, but the landowner pays a flat fee for all field operation. The landowner would buy all the inputs and market all the grains. And this is a high management, high risk alternatives. And I would just say that not many landowners use this alternative, and you have to be pretty agriculturally knowledgeable to use this alternative.
I would agree. I think you either have to be very nearby the farm. I would think you would absolutely almost have to have a farm manager in this scenario if you're an absentee owner. And you have to have a good, strong cash position because you're putting a lot of money out there and you know, you're kind of rolling the dice. So it's the highest of highs and potentially the lowest of lows. So it's about as close to being a farmer as you can.
So we have a question. How often do you need to adjust the base rent? So how often do you adjust the base rent, Luke?
Yeah, no, I mean, to me, and whether it's, listen, I think, you know, we've talked about volatility, and I know everybody's probably sick of hearing that word. I know I'm sick of saying it day to day. But to me, everything is a year-to-year agreement. I think that was on one of your first ever slides in this whole presentation. So I don't necessarily adjust the base rent every year, but I certainly don't lock it in for multiple years. I think it's something you need to look at on a yearly basis. I do think, though, there is value in trying to find a number that folks can live with and you know, try your best to stay within a range. Just because, you know, establishing a variable rent is fairly cumbersome because there's so many factors in play. And you kind of run the risk of confusion and burnout if you try to toy with that every year.
Do you have experience or thoughts on implementing leases with conservation clauses? We do have a number of conservation clauses on our website, so you can go there and look at those. And again, this is a matter of communication. What does the landowner want their farm to what conservation practices that they want on that farm? And then you have to determine if those conservation practices need some adjustment into the cash rent or the flexible cash lease. We got one more. Custom farming. This may be a little bit dated with I've always heard custom farming rates sort of in the 120 to 130 per acre range. Is that what you're hearing, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, what we try to do, you know, obviously not, you know, cheap plug for U of I here for you, Gary, but I mean, you know, you guys put out, you know, custom harvest operations. So, there are another, you know, institutions out there that put out like an acre charge for varying field activities. So we take it by practice, by acre, because you never know what's going to be needed in a year. So I think you got to see what actually had to take place and pay accordingly.
Luke Worrell and Gary Schnittke discussing agricultural farmland leases here on the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You can hear it again online at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason.